taking it more into the Hindu realm for this morning, in terms of our theme of parents as gurus and the need for parents to teach tolerance. So I have a few thoughts on that. The simplest definition of tolerance is freedom from prejudice. And prejudice, of course, is defined as suspicion, intolerance, or irrational hatred of other races, creeds, or regions. So Gurudeva has a nice writing on tolerance in Living with Shiva, which I thought I'd read. If you ever wondered why Living with Shiva has two bookmarks, one is for the lesson of the day and one is for the sutra of the day. That's why it's got two. Okay. I'm having difficulty in this light. I think I'm going to have to... Sarvana Swami, if you could get my glasses. I can't read this type in this light. Come back to that in a minute. Turning to the question of how can we cultivate tolerance in children? In other words, you can't simply say, children, be tolerant. You know, don't be prejudiced. It doesn't work like that. You know, we have to go about it in a more systematic way. So here's a few thoughts on that, I think. The first one is the idea we brought forth recently, and that's stressing that divinity exists within all people. Even people trying to harm us, or even people who dislike us, the divinity still exists within them, and we need to recognize that. This secular pledge puts it another way. Every person is a treasure, so they don't want to talk about divinity. But that's how they're putting the same idea. Every person is special. Every person is a treasure. Every person is divine. It's just that some people aren't manifesting that divinity in this lifetime. They're manifesting other qualities. But that doesn't mean it's not there. It's within each of us. And we need to teach children to respect everyone, to treasure everyone, because the divine is within them. The second point is to avoid ethnic generalizations and stereotypes, both good and bad, and focus on individuals and recognizing the qualities of that particular individual. Why would we want to avoid generalizations that are good? Because we're not looking at the individual then, even if we make good generalizations. For example, quite often we have, not quite often, but a few times a year we have Japanese groups come here. And they're always so well-mannered, so well-behaved. All the shoes are lined up in a perfect row. And they all come forward and are so respectful. So it's easy to make generalizations about Japanese people. Oh, Japanese people are also cultured. But that's a dangerous statement, because then we stop discriminating between one Japanese person and another. We're not looking at each Japanese person as an individual with different characteristics. So if we're not looking at each individual because we're making good generalizations, it's easy to start making bad generalizations because we haven't learned to look at individuals. So even good generalizations about groups of people, Chinese people are all industrious, is a dangerous statement to make in front of a child, because you're teaching the child not to look at each individual person and distinguish the characteristics in that person. I was looking at Dr. Martin Luther King's famous speech, I Have a Dream, And one of his statements, which relates to this point, is, I have a dream that my children will be recognized because of their character. Which is this idea, that individuals will look at his children and see the qualities in them, not make generalizations about them because they're black or because they're Dr. Martin Luther King's children or for this reason or that reason, but actually look deep into the individual, discern the qualities that are there, recognize them for who they are, honor them for who they are, not because of some generalization. So that's an important point, and of course it's easy to make ethnic generalizations, comments like this, just casually, watching television, because television often depicts stereotypes of people. They take, for example, the Indian. They have a certain stereotype of someone from India, and he's usually not very dynamic. If it's a man I'm talking about, tend to portray Indians as not dynamic people, but somewhat soft-spoken and so forth. So this is a stereotype that goes into the mind. And so if we see stereotypes on television, it's important to correct the mind of a child. Indians aren't all like that. This is a false concept. The media is portraying a stereotype. So we need to make children aware of these stereotypes. Another area is social interaction. This became quite apparent to me when I visited Australia about 5 years ago, and one of the activities there was a youth seminar. Older youth, I think from about age 18 through 25, so youth and young adults. And all Australians of Indian descent except for one or two, because it was a Hindu temple group. And so somehow the conversation turned to Americans at some point. They were asking questions about Americans, and they had some strange ideas about Americans. Mm-hmm. One of them that was like Americans were like John Wayne somehow. And this and that, and I realized, my goodness, you know, they haven't really socially interacted with Americans. They don't know Americans. They haven't had the opportunity to be with Americans. They haven't grown up with Americans. They're suffering from stereotypes about Americans because they have not socially interacted with them. Therefore, they have false concepts, false beliefs, and so forth, and they tend to generalize. They tend to have generalizations. Well, Americans are like this, Americans are like that. Well, of course, Americans would be the same way toward Australians, because most Americans have not had the opportunity to socially interact with Australians. So they have these general concepts. Oh, Australians are like this, Australians are like that, which, of course, isn't true. Australians are individuals. Each one is potentially quite different from the other. So what's the problem? The problem is we develop false concepts about other people simply by not having the opportunity to socially interact with them. So therefore, the idea is make sure your children interact with children of other ethnicities and religions at school, at play, and learn to feel comfortable with them. So of course, opportunities are not infinite, but we can take advantage of the opportunities wherever we live to the best of our ability to make sure that children mix with children of different backgrounds and learn to feel comfortable with them. Once children get over the difference, they're very comfortable with each other because they all love to play and do the same things if they're in similar ages. You know, there's not a lot of natural resistance there. Second idea is to provide to your own children, with an appropriate amount of fun involved, information on the customs, languages, and history of the other children. So you don't want to make it too tedious, but this book points out fun ways such as websites and children's books that tell stories and all, where they can learn about children of these different backgrounds that they're interacting with and become knowledgeable in the differences and understand the cultural differences, religious differences. Then the third point is to value diversity. Teach that there is a strength in diversity, that combining different perspectives, sensitivities, backgrounds, creates a group that has the potential to act with greater effectiveness and wisdom than a less diverse group. Our monastery is a good example of that principle of diversity. We have individuals from a number of different countries in the monastery. But of course, we're all Saivites. And the diversity gives us a strength, because coming from different backgrounds, we bring different qualities together. So it's like Gurudeva's statement, you know, combine the best of the East and the best of the West. You've heard him say that. So we're combining the best of a number of different countries together in a monastery. And therefore, it's a more effective and wise group in its actions because of that diversity. So diversity is a strength. And if we can utilize that principle and utilize it in working with children and working with different situations to try and create diversity that's appropriate to different situations, then children learn to value the diversity of a group, which is quite the opposite of wanting everyone else to be just like you, which is how some people are because they haven't been raised this way. They kind of fear that which is different. They're most comfortable with themselves and other people who are exactly like them. But through this kind of raising of children, children can be made to feel quite comfortable with people who are very different, enjoy those differences, and learn to work together in a more effective and wise manner. So now we get to read Living with Shiva, because we can see it. I spoke on global education in January of 1990 at the Global Forum for Human Survival, Development, and Environment in Moscow. My message to the 700 religious and political leaders there was that we need, in the century ahead, to teach all children tolerance, openness to different ways of life, different beliefs, different customs of dress, and language. We need to stop teaching them to fear those who are different from themselves. Stop teaching them hatred for peoples of other colors and other religions. Stop teaching them to see the world as a field of conflict. And instead, instill in them an informed appreciation and a joyous reverence for the grand diversity we find around us. Modern education can do that, provided the approach is changed. Basic human Vedic values should be taught to every child and every student. These eternal values have nothing to do with race, creed, caste, politics, or ethnic culture. Learning how to read and write is not the ultimate goal. The ultimate goal of education is also knowing what to read and what to write, as well as how to live in tune with nature, in harmony with the universe, and at peace with oneself and one's fellow man. A great Hindu saint once wrote, "Those who cannot live in harmony with the world, though they have learned many things, are still ignorant." Then in conclusion, Gurudeva says, talking about the value of the family, "While the family is suffering a lot in many parts of the world, it is still very strong in Hindu society. We have to keep it that way and teach the world by our example that it is the family that nurtures the individual and stabilizes the religion and hence the nation. Only by keeping a strong sense of family can humankind hope for a secure future." Thank you. Om Namah Shivaya.